Okay, let me ask you a few questions. Let's talk about restaurants. Would you be willing to wait for a really good restaurant a half hour, or would you just eat somewhere kind of crappy because you could get in right away?
What do you think? The look on people's faces when they wait in line is like, is this, what are you going to eat or to stand quietly?
Have you ever uttered the phrase, get off my lawn?
No.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, I've said, but I didn't mean like old man, like, get off my lawn. I meant more like, this is my property, so get off my lawn.
I'm not going to sugarcoat this for you. You have early onset grumpiness.
What?
Early onset grumpiness, EOG. You're going to begin to enjoy fewer and fewer things in your life. You'd be saying things like, who are these people?
Who are those people? It's a real question.
The only reason you leave the house is to see classic old movies, and even then you'll say, it had some good parts, but all in all, it was fairly uneven. You're very young to have EOG. Your life is going to change forever.
Is there anything I can do?
Normally we try meds, but you're too young for them. I'm sorry. I'll notify your family.
Don't notify my sister. She didn't even pick up the phone half the time. She gives people a hard time.
TBTL!
Hey, Johnny.
Oh, hi, Danny.
What's wrong with Mark?
He's cranky today.
All right. Let's toss the ball around.
How did these buff dudes escape my radar? I thought I knew about every single buff dude.
Look at the size of that boy's head.
Shh.
I'm not kidding. It's like an orange on a toothpick.
Shh, you gotta give the boy a complex.
Well, that's a huge noggin.
Remember, boys, no points for second place.
Hello. Hi. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to do this. Hello, everyone. Welcome to a Monday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
You're still doing a podcast?
My name is Luke Burbank. I am your host.
I like turtles.
Sorry for the delayed start to the show, at least as far as my contribution goes. I realized that, you know how the last week I was complaining a lot about how the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center is very, very warm here at 9 in the morning or so, as the sun rises over Lake Whatcom and Squalicum Mountain. And then I realized today, because Carrie is at work...
That's my wife.
I can just have the door to the studio open, which will create a little ventilation here. But I didn't realize that until the exact moment when I was supposed to talk, so I had to wheel back, open the door, and then come back to the microphone. I would like to mention that I'm not going to complain about the temperature in the broadcast center today, because... the temperature is actually fine. On the other hand, we're out of half and half, and so I'm having to just power through without having half and half in my coffee. So, yeah, once again, I am just going to have to overcome the odds to bring you episode 2954 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
By the way, I can't remember. I've already forgotten if I mentioned to all of you that this is TBTL. This, in fact, is the show that just might be too beautiful to live. And yes, I am Luke Burbank. Here are some of the topics that we'd like to discuss for your interest and edification. Edification is a very biblical word. Every once in a while, and by every once in a while, I mean 5 days a week when we do this show, I'm just talking for hours. And there is, at some point, I run out of words from my adult life, and I start just going back to edification and sanctification and holy, 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 and other such words from my extremely religious upbringing. Here for your edification are a couple of top stories involving television.
Television is no friend of mine.
Including the war against TV motion smoothing. That is, well, in the words of Tom Cruise...
To that end, we'd like a moment of your time to talk to you about video interpolation.
Video interpolation, also known as motion smoothing, also known as the soap opera effect. It's that thing on new TVs that makes movies and other stuff look like it's a soap opera. It's very unsettling or even uncanny, you might say, if you're used to watching film at its 24 frames per second rate. We talked about it before when the Tom Cruise thing came out, but there's some more info on it now that we will tell you about. Oh, and speaking of television, I watched all 8 episodes of this wild game show on Netflix where they make people stay awake for 24 hours counting quarters.
That cash could really get me out of a couple of jams.
And then they have to do a series of games. It's called Awake. It is a weird show. Most of it doesn't work, but I watched all of it. Ironically, in the middle of the night because I couldn't sleep. So there you go. I'll tell you about that too. Coming up, plus emails and V-mails. And my friend, the longest running Cobro of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships. What else can I tell you about this guy? He might have tacos for dinner tonight. He's back at it again with the white Vans. To me, he is, when he's speaking, an innocent champion of honesty. Oh, and he just renegotiated his contract with APM, so he's getting paid.
$100 a day, $500 a week. That's rich.
That's it.
The newly enriched and edified Andrew Walsh joins us right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood, Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
I mean, I'm comfortable. I like to use the word rich. I'd say I'm comfortable, yeah. Though, certainly. Sure. 500 a week, sure.
Mm-hmm. That's rich.
That's comfortable.
Each Monday when we join together.
Wow.
Wherever two or more of us are gathered, there a podcast shall be in our midst.
You really are leaning back on your
I mean, honestly, worshipful upbringing. I think I'm in a fugue state right now. For reasons I don't understand. I got a great night's sleep last night. I am feeling great today. As I've already mentioned, the studio is properly ventilated for once, so it's not like a million degrees. I'm ready to do a good show, and then all of a sudden, right when it was time to start talking, I think my mind left my body, and what was left was 11 years of Sunday school education. That's pretty much what – that's if you clear everything else out, that's what's still down there. Each Monday, I have on my little show sheet here – a prompt for myself to ask you, how was your weekend? Today, I have struck that through.
I see
because
that.
Because I know how your weekend went. Your weekend was insane because you went to a Mariners game, and what happened?
They won. It was incredible. The Mariners won a baseball game. Also, and I think it was the fifth inning.
I cannot believe he just told that joke.
They did sweep the series, by the way. I mean, they were playing the worst team in baseball, I think. But, you know, wins are wins. But I know that what you really want me to talk about is the thing that I'm holding in my hand and occasionally smelling. Hoping that's not too weird, which is the
crack of the bat, the smell of the ball.
That would be my baseball school.
Show
That'd
title?
Be the slogan for my baseball school. The taste of the mitt, the smell of the ball. the ball that I'm holding right now is an official Major League Baseball that I want to say caught. It was a foul ball that came my way. It was a very, very exciting moment for me. Actually, a couple of other fellas were going
caught, or at least managed
captured.
To secure a foul ball. You captured.
That's right. Two
a
fellas.
A foul ball tried at a Major League Baseball game.
That's right. Two fellas tried to catch a foul ball coming our way. They missed it. It landed on the ground, bounced, and then I picked it up off the ground. And I think that is fair play. And so I don't know. I'm working on the verb to describe how I obtained this ball. But the point is, I got my first foul ball. Maybe got is the verb that I need.
That's okay. Spare no detail. Who was the batter?
Mm-hmm. So the batter was Ryan Court. One thing that let me back up for a second and just tell you this day why everything leading up to this moment was so damn perfect, too. So Genevieve is out of town this weekend. She's camping with some friends. They didn't invite me because they know that I don't like to be out of doors, which is fantastic. Yes. So I had the house to myself for a couple of days, and I didn't really have plans. I was just going to kind of putter around, do my thing, whatever. I wake up on Saturday morning. And let's say it's around 9 o'clock, and I thought to myself, you know what? I should just go to the Mariners game today. Like, honestly, part of my rationale was, like, they are playing the Tigers, and no offense to the Detroit fans, but, like, there's a chance that we'll win. There are not many chances that we're going to win this season, especially as the season drags on. So I'm like, you know, this is a chance to go to the ballpark, maybe see another winning game. But, you know, the game probably doesn't start until 7. I don't know if I want to commit to that right now. It's only 9 in the morning. I'm like, well, you know what? If it's a day game, I'll go. But I doubt it's a day game because it's a Saturday. But I look it up, and sure as Shinkles, there it is, a day game that's starting in just a few hours.
Crack of the bat, the taste of the mitt, but now sure as shinkles. That's the new show title.
I think you get shinkles if you never had chicken pox or if you did have chicken pox. I can't remember.
So Honestly, I think anti-vaxxers are a real danger, but I do think the shingles vaccine is a government plot.
Yeah, no, just look closely.
Mostly because shingles is not a thing.
When you're getting your vaccines, make sure you're getting the shingles vaccine, not the shingles vaccine. Shingles. That one
if
is.
If the person doing the vaccination has like a rubber mask on, like a Hamburglar, like that black thing tied over their eyes, and they're kind of, their eyes are darting about and they look suspicious. And they're offering you something called the shingles vaccine. That may not be a real doctor.
I like the idea of like vaccinators, for lack of a better word, employing the same techniques that like somebody who's sending you a phishing email or a scam phone call. Like if we just change one letter, that'll probably just like slip through, and then we'll get them. Anyway,
sure, shinkles, it's a day game.
So I sort of felt like, well, fate. That's really good. And so whatever. I fought with various apps. I was determined to get a good deal on these tickets. I didn't get a super great deal on the tickets, but I was like, you know, I could call one of my friends. I'm sure there's plenty of people who would go to a baseball game with me. Maybe I'm just high on my own supply. But then I thought about it for a second. I'm like, you know what? I don't want to. I don't want to coordinate with anybody. I don't want to have to worry about anybody else's feelings or schedule. I just want to go to the ball game by myself, which I don't think I've done before. Maybe I have. I don't know.
I know you have. Are you being sarcastic?
Well, I often show up super early, but usually I'm meeting somebody there once the game begins. Right. But there's no meeting up with anybody. So it's like I'm just going to buy one ticket for myself. And so I found a ticket. I figured I'd pay a little bit more than maybe I usually would, although I found a relatively good deal along the first base line, which is good foul ball territory. But I wasn't really thinking about that. I was just excited. I got to the ball game and I was texting you and sending you pictures and said, "Hey, this bachelor went to a baseball game," or something along those lines.
Mostly, before the foul ball came into your life, you were fixated on the fact that the guy in front of you was eating all of his bread bowl with his soup.
I mean,
I was like, isn't that the whole point of the bread bowl? And you were like, yeah, but he's leaving no crumb behind.
Yes. And to see it happening in a ballpark, I think, was what was kind of shocking. Like, I haven't had a bread bowl with soup in a really long time, but yeah, I love those things. They're great. And of course, the whole point is you then eat the
more of our dishes.
Yeah, right? That's why did you notice I got rid of all my dishes and I just have giant pieces of salami here at the house, and I just serve people salad off.
That's a problem for me. It means I can't eat anything at your house anymore.
That's right. Sorry. I guess I can get giant cucumber slices for you. I just thought this guy was just like really going to town on this soup bowl in the ballpark before the game even began. And I felt like I kept on watching him finish it. But then every now and then I would look over and he still found another part of the bowl to devour. Like I was like, what is left in there? I thought he was going to eat the cardboard tray it came in. But anyway. It's like the fifth inning or something. I'm actually no longer sitting in the section that I paid for. The seat that I was in was fine, but I went up to get a beer, and there was a baby sleeping to the left of me, and I didn't want to wake those people up, or I didn't want to wake her up and disrupt the family. And then so I go out the other way, and there's a bunch of kids not sleeping in that, and I had to crawl over all this stuff to get out of the aisle. So when I get my beer and I come back, I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to crawl over these people and go back to my other seat. This section to my left, which is actually slightly better, I guess, has tons of just open seats. So I go back there, and I have a row entirely to myself. I sit behind some fans who are up from Portland. Not fans. They actually didn't really know much about the team. But so we were kind of talking and stuff. It's very rare that I get to be the person who knows more about a sport or a sporting event than the other people there. So that felt really good. The one guy who clearly was a baseball fan, but I could just tell from conversation, he was an older guy, probably, you know, older than me, probably maybe like in his early 60s. And he seemed to be talking to his buddy about players of years gone by. He was wearing a Yankees hat, but, you know, I can look past that. sometimes. And anyway, I could tell that he knew about baseball, but he wasn't super interested in this game, and he was looking down at his phone a lot. And then, and I'm watching the game. That's what I'm there to do. And then all of a sudden, a ball. You know, did I tell you? So the batter is Ryan Court is his name, and he is making his first major league start. He actually got, I think, to play a couple of innings off the bench the day before, but this is a 31-year-old baseball player, which is pretty old to be getting your first major league start. He's just been, you know, kind of a, you know, grinding it out in the minors. Sure. And so this is a big day for him in this particular at
bat. Big day for both of you, would turn out.
Yeah, it would turn out. At this at bat, he sends one flying in our direction. And there have been many times at a ballpark where I think for a second something is coming my way, right? A ball is coming my way, but it turns out your depth perception is off, or it's just high up there and you can't really tell where it's going to land. This time, it is definitely coming our way. And the reason I mentioned the guy in front of me not paying too much attention to the game is I noticed that he's looking down at his phone a lot, looking up stuff, texting with somebody who looked like just graduated. I was right behind him. I could see what was going on in his phone. And so I just stand up.
You have a lot of detail on what was going on in this guy's phone.
And so I just start yelling, heads up, heads up, heads up, because I could tell the four people in front of me did not see this thing coming. And sure as shit, it is coming near us. It's coming very close.
Sure as shingles.
Sure as shingles, sorry. And then these two guys kind of sitting behind me come rushing up, and it looks like they're going to grab it, one of them, but
okay,
they miss
this
it.
This is where now this is this is the crux of the situation for me, or what I'm curious about is the scrum, the everybody kind of like angling for the ball, because there's been a lot of stuff in the sports, well, little kind of viral moments in the sports news of late of like adults snagging balls away from kids or actually, at a Mariner game, there was a dad who was sitting there, had his kid strapped in, and one of those baby Bjorn-type deal. He caught this fast-moving foul ball, like it was more or less a line drive that he just kind of snagged with his hand. I'm always curious about the capturing of the foul ball, and if you had to, did you have to elbow anyone? Was someone trying to elbow you?
I carry this little like knife. It's not even really a knife. It's like a sharpened toothbrush.
I can't believe they let you into the stadium with that.
Hey, I just say I got to have a beautiful smile. Do you notice, did we already talk about this in dental commercials now? Nobody ever uses the word teeth or dental or anything. They only talk about smiles. Seems like a real marketing turn. And listen to the next, like, I don't know, teeth whitening commercial or whatever. So what about your smile? Anyway, the section I was in was pretty empty. So once these guys, they kind of went to catch it in the air, it was all happening very quickly too. So I think it was two guys. Maybe it was just one guy, two came down. It's all kind of periphery vision. I'm
Everyone's
keeping my
converging around where they think the foul ball's
going. Yeah, but there's not that many of us. There's like these two guys who are in the row behind me, which is like one step up, if you can picture it. And then, so I'm down below. They make some sort of play for it, but then it hits the ground kind of at their feet and rolls down into my section, and so I just have to take like two big steps and just pick it up. Now, I mean, part of me is kind of like, well, wait, they were going for it. Do you give it to them? And like, no. I mean, if they were a kid, I would. But I was just like, and here's the deal. Did you read Underworld by Don DeLillo? It's a very long, weird.
I read the
epic.
First like 50 pages.
That's the important part.
I can plausibly lie at parties that I read Underworld is really what I did.
How the first 50 pages fits in with the rest of the book, I can't even tell you anymore.
The kid getting the ball.
But it's all about the kid getting the very special ball. What was it? It was like the most...
It was the shot heard around the world. It was Bobby Thompson's home run.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you. I couldn't have told that without you because I can't remember. But anyway, the kid, there's a kid in the stands who grabs the ball and then like has to like kind of fight for it. And then there's a moment, I think, where he's just trying to get out of the stadium with this prize in his pocket and he doesn't want to call any attention to himself. And it was so weird how when I was leaving the stadium, and again, and probably all of these emotions were probably amplified because I was by myself and I just felt like a boy playing hooky a little bit. But when I was leaving the stadium and I had my little backpack with me and the balls in my backpack, I'm just like, just get out of here. You just got to get out of here quickly before anybody, you know, tries to question whether or not you should have this ball. I'm just like, dude.
You're the kid from Underworld escaping with your Bobby Thompson home run.
Only it's
your Ryan Court foul ball.
It's a Ryan Court foul ball. Exactly.
It's beautiful.
But it was just like for a moment. But it was literally a perfect day at the ballpark, man.
That's awesome, and I will tell you, I remember the only time I've never caught – I don't think I've ever caught a a home run or even a batting practice home run, you know, just straight out of the air. I have gotten one foul ball in a baseball game. It was when I was a kid. It was at the Kingdom, and I remember who hit it. It was a Boston Red Sox player named Ellis Burks, and Ellis Burks popped it up. And I probably told the story on the show before, but my buddy Peter and I, we were probably seventh or eighth grade. We go to – it was a daytime game. They called it a business person special. There was nobody there. We snuck down. We bought the cheapest seats. We literally climbed over various like fences and barricades within the Kingdom to get to the better seats. And then we got into these really good seats, like right behind the dugout. And we're sitting there, and the ticket person comes over to like kick us out. And these two very nice business dudes who seemed old to me, they were probably like 29.
Yeah.
They were like, right. They're with us. Like they covered for us, which was super nice. And then, I don't know, at some point later in the game, pop fly, Ellis Burks, or I should say foul ball, popped up, bounces. It's in the row that we're all in. The two business dudes who are we're only there because of them being kind to us. They reach down for it. My friend Peter starts kicking their hands as hard as he can. I snag the ball. And then I'm like, I got this ball. The businessmen are like, you know, you could have just asked for the ball. You didn't have to kick us.
Did they actually say that, or that was just their vibe they were giving off?
No. One of them was like, you didn't have to kick us. Sorry. Got a little carried away there. But I remember it vividly, and I remember like who hit the like that was such a big deal to me. So I was so I will mention that the we got to go to break here, but the Fun Lovin' Criminals, our sports text chain that you and I are on, and a number of our friends and fellow sports fans are on, it's gone a little bit.
Yeah,
it's gone a little dormant because the Mariners are just a tough team to watch right now. And football season hasn't really ramped up yet, so we're kind of in this. We're in a little bit of a lull. But man, yesterday when you put the picture of the baseball in your hand onto the Fun Loving Criminals, immediate response. You really re-energized the text chain with that.
Yeah, no, it was definitely. And I mean, I was so you can imagine how much adrenaline was pumping through me. Like I was probably shaking for the rest of that inning. And the fact that like I kind of knew, like I was. I kind of knew what was going on with this game. Like the story of I'll bore you really quickly before we go to the break. Like I was watching Ryan Court kind of closely because it was his major league start. I wanted to see if he was going to do anything special. At this at bat, by the way, he didn't do anything special. I can't remember. He either grounded out or struck out. I can't recall. I do think he got an RBI in the game, but the reason he even was playing, the reason he even got his cup of coffee, I guess, as they say, if I'm using that correctly, is because
you are.
There was another kid who made his major league start on Thursday's game and was doing really well and then got hit. Do you know this? Lopes is his last name. I don't know. I can't recall his first name, but it's L-O-P-E-S, pronounced Lopes. He got hit in the damn, in the shinkled head with a baseball. Whoa. Luckily, it hit the ear flap on his helmet. But it was one of those games where, you know, his family was there. I think his fiance or maybe wife, his parents were there. They
right,
kept showing them.
Was it his debut?
It was his major league start. He had played again. Like, I think he had come off the bench.
But he hadn't started a game.
But he hadn't started a game. And so.
And then he gets hit in the head.
And he was having a really good game. And then he got hit in the head. They think they kept him in because, you know, sports are responsible. But then after the game, he did go on the concussion protocol and he's now on the injured list. So that cleared the way for them to bring up this other guy, Ryan Court. So I kind of knew the backstory and I was keeping my eye on him just to see what he would do. And then to catch his ball, actually, even though, you know, there are other players actually on Saturdays. On Saturday's roster, I don't even know if there's anybody I'd prefer to have the ball from. I mean, nobody's going to remember. No offense, but nobody's going to remember the name Ryan Court in the future. Like nobody's.
You never
they're
know.
Not
he
retiring
had three RBIs.
His name.
They're saying that he was one of the big standouts of the weekend. So maybe
three RBIs across the weekend. That's good.
Maybe I don't know. I just saw a headline. I was just looking up who he was. It said Court leads Mariners this weekend with three RBIs. I'll tell you, like this is kind of esoteric baseballness, but I love that he's a 31-year-old rookie because, like you already said, like people think that if you're a minor league baseball player, that still must be a really fun life, and I'm sure in certain ways it is, but it does not really pay anything if you're not one of these, if you're not somebody who was highly drafted out of high school or college and then paid a big bunch of money and you're on track to go up to the majors, if you're not one of those guys, there's a lot of journeymen who are just grinding it out. They're not making a ton of money and they're just waiting for their chance. And like, you know, at 31, he's been doing that for a decade, a decade, trying to get better, trying to, you know, figure out what it is that he needs to do to get to the major league level. So when somebody gets called up at 31, that represents a decade of taking buses to Rancho Cucamonga to play the Quakes or whatever.
Yeah, like, good memory.
A lot. He's a former Portland Sea Dog, I think the internet says. It's just like it just represents a lot of kind of semi-unglamorous work. Now, there are much less glamorous jobs than being even a minor league baseball player, but that's a cool story. So I'm glad to hear that he actually was able to get some RBIs, and I think it's cool that that's who you got a ball from.
Yeah, me too. And, of course, now next time I go to the ballpark, I will start something that I'm going to call Court's Court, where we all wear, where we all wear judges' robes and big white wigs.
I want you to get a Ryan Court jersey.
No way. Let's everybody calm down.
Would be amazing.
Let's not throw bad money after good or whatever they say.
No, no, no. Get a Ryan Court jersey, and then people will ask you, well, who? What?
Right.
Years from now.
Right.
And you'll be like, oh, Ryan Court, of course. Mm-hmm. And they're like, who? What? You're like, do you remember when he hit a foul ball on July 25th? Were you not there? Do you not remember that? It was huge.
Read Underworld. Jeez, do I have to explain everything to you?
That's right. All right, let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, we shall do top stories. Oh, I want to remind everyone about the upcoming TBTL tourable. Thanks for asking. I'm going to go with that for the moment. But I want to tell you about our tour coming up. I was saying something slightly erroneous, so I want to clarify that. Plus, like I said, top stories plus emails and V-mails. So don't go anywhere. This is TBTL. I assume this is Ryan Court's walk-up music.
This is actually Bud Court's walk-up music.
Interesting. Who's Bud Court?
He's an actor. He was in a couple of things that made you think that he was going to be a household. Like, he was in The Chocolate War. Do you remember the movie of the novel The Chocolate War or The Chocolate Wars? I'm just getting further and further away from explaining this, aren't I? Bud Court.
Oh,
Harold and Maude. He was the kid in Harold and Maude.
Oh, okay. Sure.
I think he was also... I don't know why I went to The Chocolate Wars first. I think that's where I first heard of him.
Huh. And, I mean, did he... I have to be honest with you. This is going to sound like I'm being a no but. But I did not watch Harold and Maude and think that guy's going to be Hollywood gold.
Right. Like, no, that's fair. But I think it was actually... And maybe... I'm looking at this. Was he in The Chocolate Wars? Was I totally wrong about
that? What was The Chocolate Wars?
The Chocolate War was a... I mean, I think...
That's not your own special name for Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, is it?
Yes, it is. It's the one where they get sucked up in the fan. He goes, "Burp, Charlie, burp," which is my favorite
line.
Oh,
yeah, no, I think you're thinking of Charlie and the Chocolate
Factory. No, no, definitely The Chocolate War. The Chocolate War was a young adult novel that I think was I think it had one of those awards that kind of, you know, make it stand out. I think a lot of kids read The Chocolate War. And then
Caldecott or something.
They turned it into a movie. I'm looking in here. 1988, based on Robert Cormier's novel of the same name, about a young man who rebels against the ingrained hierarchy of an elite Catholic school. Maybe that's why it was on my radar.
Oh,
Catholic.
Torn from the headlines of your life.
Right. And so, anyway, I knew him from that. And then also, you know what you would know him from? This is such bad radio. But here's what what you would know him from. There's a joke about him, and he has a very, very brief appearance in Arrested Development, because in the show, Judge Reinhold is starting a reality TV show where he plays a judge, because his name is Judge, but then they keep changing the name of it because he doesn't want to, like, he doesn't want to just use his name, so they change it to, like, Mock Trial with Jay Reinhold. Do you remember this at all?
That must have been the season that I started to get off the bus.
It's actually really funny. Like, Judge Reinhold finds out that they're doing this just because his name is Judge Reinhold, and he doesn't like that. It takes the authenticity out of him as a reality TV judge. So they end up changing the name of it to Mock Trial with Jay Reinhold. And then somehow later on, that morphs into Bud's Court, I believe. And we see a quick shot of Bud's Court. Anyway, what a unorganized little wormhole I just tried to take you into.
I want to remind people that we are going to be doing a little mini tour in September, end of September, beginning of October, in celebration of the 3,000th episode. Andrew, I was dying reading the newsletter on Friday. You undersold it to me because I had seen some of the names that you'd come up with for the tour, but I thought it was really funny. I really do like tourable. Thanks for asking.
That might be my favorite. There are a bunch of good ones on there. I don't know if I do like that. I also like your Touring Me Apart, Lisa. That's probably my second favorite. Yeah.
So we're going to be in Orlando Monday, September 30th, New York City on Wednesday, October 2nd, and then on Friday, October 4th, we'll be in Seattle. I think I was saying September 4th for some weird reason. Like, I don't know what calendar you're on, but yeah, the one I'm on, it reverts back to being September for some reason. Mm-hmm. October 4th will be in Seattle. Now, we actually have not figured out the venues yet. We're working on that, but we're telling you this so that you can, if you're like anywhere near Orlando and you want to come down, just know Monday, September 30th is when we'll be there. Again, Wednesday we'll be in New York City on October 2nd, and then the 4th of October back in Seattle. So, that's what's going on with that. It's going to be really exciting. As we get the venues locked in and the travel plans made, you'll start to hear about that a lot, probably. You know, we're only able to do this kind of stuff because of our fine, fine donors to the show, who we should probably take a moment to thank right now. These people are donating to the TBT. They donated during the TBT telethon. Many of them are making recurring donations, and it is just absolutely essential to this operation. I'll tell you what. Jane Johnson of Everett, Washington, thank you. Robin Laughlin Eron of Stevens Point, Wisconsin. Meredith Van Harn of Detroit, Michigan. Meredith, I pray to God Andrew's hurtful comments about the Detroit Tigers did not cause you to withdraw your donation. Because now I'm thanking you, which means you're legally obligated to keep the donation going.
Puts
us in a really unfortunate position.
First of all, hi, Meredith. We know Meredith, longtime listener and friend of the show. And also, I have nothing but love in my heart for the Detroit Tigers. I take no pleasure
out of
beating up on a team that's also having a very struggling season. I mean, you know, I'm glad that we got the win. I root for the Mariners, but it's not like, you know, there are certain teams that I have animus towards. I have zero animus towards the Detroit Tigers.
Me too. Alisa Nicholas of Atlantic Beach, Florida. I wonder if Alisa is going to be able to come up.
We've been hearing from a lot of people in Florida who are very, I'll use the word chuffed, although I don't like to use that word.
Too close to Chubb.
With the Browns running back? Are we done talking sports? Are we talking football now?
Absolutely.
You know, I think that we were saying, boy, it might only be Nick. We'll just have to do this at Nick's house. And a lot of people are like, nay, 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 get the venue because we cannot wait to descend on Orlando. Or a lot of people who actually live in Orlando. So I'm excited about that. And we'll see Alicia there too.
We want to say thanks to Luke and Amy Rockenbach of Kent, Washington. Maybe they'll come to the Seattle show, or maybe they'll mix it up and come to the Orlando show. And then Derek Schlichter of Kenmore, Washington, located very close to Briar, Washington, where Gospel Outreach Christian Fellowship was the cradle of all of my biblical terminology that you heard me fuguing into the show. I don't know if you could use fugue as a verb, but I just did.
Yeah.
And so a big thanks as well to Derek. Thanks, Derek, Amy, Luke, Alisa, Meredith, Robin, and Jane. We would absolutely not be able to do this show without you.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
We talked about this motion smoothing or video interpolation when that what we thought was kind of weird video came out of Tom Cruise and the director of, I think it was the Mission Impossible 5 Fallout or something, basically asking people to turn their TVs off of this motion smoothing thing. And we talked about it then, and I think we even had Camaro Kev on.
I think we called him. I think I said just like, can we just get him on the randomly line? Yeah.
And you know what? He was explaining it, but I got to be honest with you. Maybe because I was in the midst of trying to host the show, I don't think I really grasped what he was saying until I read this recent article in Vulture by Bilge Ibiri that says motion smoothing is ruining cinema. And Bilge, I'm going to just go with that on the name. It's B-I-L-G-E. I don't know how you would. If we were on a boat, that would be pronounced bilge, mm-hmm. and the bilge pump. But anyway, this person, Bilge, is writing about – wrote about it, kind of explained it in a way that I hadn't really understood of like why – and again, I know Camaro Kev said this and everyone else probably grasped it, but I didn't. What's going on with motion smoothing? What it really comes down to is film is 24 frames per second, but TVs, particularly our new TVs, have – way, 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 way higher refresh rate than that. And so somebody invented this because what happens is if you just show a movie that's at 24 frames per second on a TV that's operating at like 120 hertz or even 240 hertz, the difference between how fast the TV is refreshing and how many frames the movie, the film is putting out per second creates something called judder. Which is this kind of weird, you know, I guess it's just a judder. I guess it's just the word for it. And so they were trying to fix that. This was the part that I didn't quite understand. Motion smoothing, the process whereby your TV predicts, creates, and inserts new frames in between the existing frames of a program in order to reduce judder. So I guess what it's doing, Andrew, is it's like taking – it's basically making a bunch of copies of what it's seeing – before and after, like what this space is, and then it's inserting them really fast so that you're seeing this in between, this smoothing effect. But it creates its whole own bunch of artifacts and issues and weirdness. The problem is it's the default setting on most new TVs, other than Vizio. That's the one. Vizio has aligned themselves with the filmmakers of the world. They're like, we're not going to make motion smoothing the default setting. And for most other major TVs, it is, to the point that the Cannes Film Festival, Andrew, the extremely well-respected Cannes Film Festival, all of the TVs that they had running at the Cannes Film Festival were set on motion smoothing. And people were freaking out. But it's because it was the default setting. And whoever set these things up, you know, in various red carpet scenarios and this, that, and the other, nobody knew that you had to go deep into the bowels of the TVs to – undo the fact that they were defaulted to motion smoothing. That cracked me up, the idea that like the venerable Cannes Film Festival was even doing this.
Yeah, I'm still confused about a key point of this, and I know that you're not bringing this up to be the explainer, because it's a little bit like that. Bitcoin for me. I mean, I've heard Camaro Kev explain this.
You lost a lot of money in it?
Yeah, on the show, off the show, we've had these conversations. We listened to Tom Cruise and his Top Gun director trying to explain
it. Oh, that's what
it was.
I said Mission Impossible.
It might have been
it was Top Gun.
It might be the same guy, though. Anyway.
Christopher McQuarrie.
Is that the guy?
Whoever cares, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like this very, it's this weird thing where handsome, charming Tom Cruise is just like talking about the nerdiest TV technology, trying to explain, and it just goes over my head. It almost sounds like one of those scenes in Amazon Patriot where people are just talking about techno babble jargon. And so I've had it explained to me a million times. Right. But sorry, I have to sneeze, but I don't know if it's going to happen. So I'm just going to power forward with this sentence. If the current situation is you play these movies and you get judder, or you use the smoothing thing and you get the soap opera effect, are when people like Camaro Kev and I think myself suggest that you turn off the smoothing effect, are we seeing the judder and it's just not as bad? We always have to choose between judder and smoothing because this.
As of right now, yes. But the thing is, a lot of people don't see judder.
I was going to. Okay, people, see, I'll bet you judder isn't as. I have shingles on my judder, as a matter of fact, and it doesn't cause any problems for me at all.
You really are a McMillan man, I tell you. Watch this space.
Yeah.
Yeah, what part of it is everyone's eye. Well, people's eyes work differently, and some people see judder and some people don't. And one of the things that happened was they think that some of these TV engineers were really keyed into it, and they were noticing the judder more than normal people were, and they were like, we got to come up with a solution to this. But many people would just watch a conventional film, that is 24 frames per second, on a newer TV, and they wouldn't see the judder. It would be fine.
Ah.
The motion smoothing is a more noticeable thing. I don't think anybody fails to notice the motion smoothing effect, and you kind of can't put your finger on it why it feels different. Well, here's one of the things that old Bilge talks about in this article, that we watch different things differently because of a scientific principle called entrainment. So they talked to a neuroscience professor named Pascal Wallisch, who studies cognition and perception. And talks about entrainment, which posits that certain external stimuli, such as beats per minute in music or subtly flickering movie images, can actually affect the nervous system. The frequency of the stimulus entrains neuron activity, which allows you to go into a kind of trance state, which could explain why movies are often portrayed as magical, transfixing phenomena, on some level they are. In other words, 24 frames per second is almost hypnotizing us into a trance state, which is part of why we like watching movies, because we are kind of in this dreamlike sort of event. And when you start to have more frames per second, you take people out of that dreamlike state, and that's why we don't like watching movies that way.
Wow, that's really interesting. So that state, just to be very clear, that's something that's been going on forever. Like when you go to the movies and you sit there and you're transfixed, like it has nothing to do with the new technology. That's just a longstanding thing.
It's just this theory that this neuroscience professor has about entrainment, that we've kind of become trained because of growing up watching film at 24 frames per second and seeing it in theaters for a certain kind of experience. And even there – now this is where I'm getting out of my – element, Donnie, and we're like, we need Camaro Kev or somebody who knows more. But even there are a lot of films that we see in the movie theater are now shot digitally. But I believe that they use technology that makes them still the final product appear very film-like. And that's because I think – like that's why when you go see an Avengers movie, it's very possible that those movies are shot – they're not shot on film anymore.
Oh, right.
But they shoot them digitally, but they shoot them in such a way and they process them in such a way that it basically still looks film-like. Because were it to just look like Law and Order or a soap opera, it would really throw you off because you're used to – your eyes and your brain are used to a certain kind of rhythm. Because an entire cinematic language has developed around the rate of 24 frames per second. The way actors perform, the way shots are composed – and cut, and the way cameras move. This is why an awards show or a news broadcast shot on video at a higher frame rate looks and feels different from a film. In other words, if you want to tell stories at higher frame rates, you're going to have to tell them differently. And that may require new forms of creativity. Because essentially, we're shooting movies based on them being presented at 24 frames per second. There's a lot of stuff that goes into that, why things work on film, and then when we just motion smooth and we just add in a bunch of new frames, it really screws up the whole process.
Can I tell you something weird about me that I think is related to this that I'm going to try to put words to because I've never tried to explain this before? But you know how I say when I'm hungry, especially if I'm like going to like lunch or dinner by myself, it's less about what food do I want to eat in the moment but more about what situation do I want to be in. Yeah, like, do I want to go to a diner where I sit, you know, on a stool, or do I want to be in a fast food place, whatever. Like, I just picture myself there. I'm like, ah, that's the experience I want, and I go. I am the same way when it's kind of like late at night, it's just me watching TV, and I want to put on something that's a little bit more probably background for me, because I'm probably playing Hearthstone or something on my iPad. I will often choose a movie based on not the content, not whether or not it's an action movie or a drama or a comedy, but what era it was made, because I want the feeling of like whatever the film stock was like at that time. I don't think about it in that way, but like the big one, and of course this is obvious, but like that late 1970s golden era of like Jaws. I think of Jaws as being the perfect kind of look for me for film. It's like smooth. I'm not enough of a film nerd to explain what is, you know, what was being used as far as film there, or what the aspect ratio or whatever it was. But for me, I don't think Jaws is that great of a movie, but it's one of my favorite movies to have on because I just love the vibe of it. The other day, I was more in a 90s thing, and I saw that Hulu was playing a movie called Runnin' Scared with Gregory Hines and
Billy Crystal.
Billy Crystal. You know that movie.
Yeah.
The
Shine Sweet Freedom is from the soundtrack of Runnin' Scared.
That is where, because I remember that being in there. I actually had, you know, when that song was playing, that Michael McDonald song, I actually had an imaginary conversation with you where I explained that, you know what, I just don't think I'm ever going to like
Michael
McDonald.
Funny that
like
we do this 5 days a week and you're still having imaginary conversations with me when we're not doing it.
You really have a spell on me. No, I mean, I was thinking about how much people, so many of our friends, you were the first one I knew, and then it seems like other people, maybe it's from hanging out all together, you guys, or what, but like you guys have a real appreciation for Michael McDonald that I'm just simply never going to have. Like, I just don't like those sounds. Like, when that came on during the movie, I'm just like, I just don't like this. There are other things that I thought were corny when I was a kid, and now I've come to like them, like the Carpenters and stuff like that. But I just do not like the sound of Michael McDonald songs at all, and I just don't think I'm going to.
I could get that. I think I can understand that. The video for Shine Sweet Freedom is pretty great because it's I'm going to get some part of the details wrong, but it's – I don't even remember what is the plot of Runnin' Scared? Gregory Hines – and Billy Crystal have to, like, are they like Detroit cops? They're cops in some sort of gritty place, and then I think that they try to escape or whatever. But the video for Runnin' Scared is like Michael McDonald, Billy Crystal, and Gregory Hines, I think, are in like Key West, and they're just like loving the fact that they're somewhere tropical and warm and not in wherever. There's a lot of Detroit talk today on the show, but what is the plot of Runnin' Scared?
It's actually Chicago is the city. I know Chicago. That because he's a big Cubs fan. Basically got it. They're cops. They're undercover cops. They get sucked into a case. I can't even remember what they did wrong. Like I say, it was kind of background noise for me. They do something wrong. It's the typical, like, we're putting you on suspension. You need to take a vacation and get out of here. So they
give me your badge.
Yeah, I don't think they had to give up their badges.
You can no longer tell people about our fried pickles.
So they head down to Florida very begrudgingly. They don't want to be taken off the case, but then they take to it, right? Especially Billy
I'm watching
Crystal.
The video now.
Now he wants to buy a restaurant down there and just live the good life. But then they get pulled back to Chicago, back onto a case, and now they don't want to be doing it anymore. Like, that Florida trip really changed them. I think that's the general
plot.
So
much great mugging in this video. Oh, they're on Honda. Gregory Hines and Billy Crystal are on matching Honda Elite scooters.
Right? I know. I think Veeves walked in at that point. She's like, look, Honda Elite.
Oh, my God. That's great. But I get you. I get not liking Michael McDonald's voice. I do like it, but it makes sense that it wouldn't be for everybody. It's a kind of a niche thing that you have to, I think, have a certain level of musical appreciation to really get. And I just
I'm just not there yet. I'll you know the way you put it like that, I'm going to keep working on it. I'm going to listen to some records.
Speaking of the television you want to be watching at a certain time, I had a weird thing. I feel lucky. Let me just keep with the biblical kind of parlance. I feel blessed that I don't have much insomnia. I generally don't have a hard time sleeping, but I had. It was weird. I went to bed on Saturday night kind of early. It was like 10. And then I woke up, and then it was like – I woke up at like 3 in the morning, and I kind of had to go to the bathroom. And I was like, don't get up. Don't do this. Don't break the seal. Don't wake yourself up. And then I did. So then I was like awake, and I didn't want to wake Carrie up. So I'm like
in the other room, and I have my laptop, and I'm like, don't open your laptop. If you open your laptop, you're never going back to sleep. You know what
definitely.
I mean? That blue light.
Oh, yeah, I've never done that.
But,
yeah.
But I was just kind of like, I don't know. I had already slept for 5 hours. That was the thing. That's mm-hmm. almost a night's sleep. So I was like, all right. So I start – I actually was going to watch – I was – talk about like watching the TV show you want to watch at the time. I was debating between various shows, and I was telling myself, I don't want to start watching something important or meaningful, like I'm really into this new TV series, Perpetual Grace Unlimited. But I was like, I don't want to like commit to an hour of being awake, and also I don't want to. So I get on Netflix and I'm poking around, and I end up on this Netflix game show called Awake, which the premise is, or I guess the setup is, they take, I don't know, 5 or 6 people. They put them in a room with $1 million in quarters. I kept thinking, is this a, like, at some point, is the Noid going to jump out? Is this, like, it almost seemed like it was a parody of a, like, can this really be real? Did they really do this? I kept waiting for, or like, I kept waiting for it to be a Tim Robinson, You Should Leave mm-hmm. sketch. They take 5 or 6 people. They put them in a room with $1 million of quarters. And then the people have to count the quarters for 24 hours and keep track in their heads of how much money they've counted in quarters. And then as soon as the 24 hours is up, each person, as they're counting their quarters, they're sliding them off a table into a big, like, cart. They then wheel their cart of quarters into this, like, game show set with a crowd and this host. And then they have to do a series of, like, difficult challenges that are especially hard when you haven't slept for 24 hours and you're trying to remember your total of quarters you counted.
Wow, I see. So it's not always the quarter. Like, one of the challenges was the quarter thing, and that's what you happen to see. But it looks like different episodes, they give them different tasks like this that get increasingly hard
it's
as they stay
awake.
It's
always the quarters. The quarters are the bedrock
oh, really?
Of each episode. It always starts with the contestants counting quarters for 24 hours. Everything else flows from that. And then on stage, they have to win these competitions so they get to be the when they're the last person on the stage. Then they have to try to guess at how – they have to try to say how many quarters do they think they counted. And then it's so complicated, Andrew. It is one of the most complicated game shows I've ever seen, which is also why I kept thinking it was going to be a sketch, because I was like, they keep having to explain these very, very involved rules about – going for the big money versus your money, but if you're off by 500, you can win the big money, but you can't win the $1 million. But if you're off by, like, it's just, it was so mathematical. Like, it was meant to basically confuse people who've been awake for 24 hours. It was confusing me, and I'd been awake for 20 minutes. But I was also very intrigued by it. It reminded me of our 24-hour anniversary shows. I kept putting myself in the place of, like, how would I be doing after 24 hours? And also, what would my strategy be for – because you can't have a pencil or a pen or anything else. You're counting these quarters just for 24 straight hours, and then you're trying to remember how much you counted in quarters. Like, what would my strategy be for remembering that?
I don't know. I can, my brain is a little bit frazzled thinking about that. Yeah, not having a pen and paper takes some of the fun out of it for me. I love rolling quarters. I know that's not the point of the story, but that's actually very, like,
you're not kind
of,
rolling them either.
Oh, they're just counting them. But I do like those.
You're counting
kind of,
them and throwing them in a bin.
Those kind of meditative things of just, like, organizing right. things. Like, when I get my pull tabs, I always, like, count them out and put them in little stacks before I start popping them open. And I do kind of like the idea of that. My question for you, which I think is going to be a non-starter, is, do you think that this was actually sort of made for insomnia too? It's hard because
I wondered about that.
Schedule things, you know, because it's Netflix, you can watch it whenever the hell you want. But did it make you a little bit more tired? Or did it make you appreciate wanting to go to bed, seeing all these people trying to stay awake?
I literally was like, oh, thank God I can just go to bed right now if I want to. It did have an oddly calming effect. And the other thing was, what I realized was I didn't actually care about any of the challenges. Mm-hmm. What I was curious about, there was this – again, me trying to explain this over the podcast, well, it's so confusing. But basically what happens is, if you make it down to being the final person, the thing – it really comes down to how good of a job did you do at remembering the exact count that you did over those 24 hours. Like, let's say you counted $33,000 in quarters exactly. If you – counted that and you remembered it and you were right and you were down to the like dollar, then you're basically set up to potentially win $1 million. You win literally all the quarters that they have, which is they start with $1 million in quarters. But people are never – they never remember exactly how much they counted. They think they do. They're trying to. But because they didn't have a pencil and paper, they're off by some amount. And so there's this whole – there's like series of steps where it's like, okay, do you want to keep all the money you counted? Like let's say it's about $30,000. Or do you want to roll the dice and get all the money that everyone on the show counted, which would be more like $150,000? So for that to happen, you need to be within a certain – you need to be a certain amount of accurate. And then if you do that, then it's like, do you want to go to the million? And then for that, you have to be within $25 of the amount you counted. But all of which is to say, I realized I didn't care about any of the in-between parts. Here's what I cared about. People's strategy for counting quarters and then if the person made $1 million or not. So I watched the entire season. I'd watch the first 3 minutes and then I would just jump to the end and I'd watch the last 3 minutes. And I was like, this is the perfect way to watch these kinds of weird game shows. Just – I watched the whole season. I probably watched it for 40 minutes total. I got what I needed out of it, and then I went to sleep.
There is a game show that for a while we got a little obsessed with that was only – I could only find it on YouTube and when people would come over and like, you know, how you, like after a party or something, you've only got like the kind of last few friends who are just kind of sticking around and you just end up watching YouTube videos with them. I don't know if that's a universal feeling or not. But there is a Japanese, one of those great Japanese game shows that had like some physical challenges. And this one was, it sounds gross. And I find things gross, generally speaking. So you think this would wig me out, but it was so fascinating. It was, I think, four people each dressed in some sort of a rubbery suit with a primary color, let's say green, yellow, red, blue, and they had to climb up this, you know, set of kind of like a big staircase sort of or like a waterfall.
Oh, yeah, that was covered. It's covered in like lube. Butter or something.
Yeah, it was like and pour oh like God, the, some so sort of great. Lubricant is being like buckets are at the top and they keep pouring them down like automatically. And they the first one to the top wins. And it's like it's very cushioned. It is like kind of a it's kind of stepped sort of like stairs, but is very cushioned as well. And so it's hard to do even if nobody's touching you. But then as they kind of get near the top, you can pull the other person down because nobody's really getting hurt in this environment. And it is so frustrating and fascinating to watch at the same time. It just sucked me in. I could just watch that for hours.
Yes. I love – I just saw that. That went around as a viral video at some point. And I watched it for hours and was utterly riveted at people trying to crawl upstairs because I do think you get into this – at least maybe this is just how my brain is oriented. I start thinking, what would my strategy be? Do you think that way?
With this one, yes. The quarter one is like as you were fast-forwarding to the end of the show, in the same way my brain was kind of fast-forwarding through the parts, like math and stuff doesn't seem fun to me at all, and I kind of don't have that gambling brain. So I don't think as strategically about it, but I've actually found this video again. I'm watching these people trying to climb these stairs, and yes, it's impossible not to think, well, if I was there, I would go for the wall. Oh, my God, if that's right. When one person slips, if they're near the top, they just bowl everybody. They just take everybody out. This is so great. I need to stop it because I will only talk about that. But in something like this, yeah, you're like, okay, well, you need to get in the corner there. Use the wall or something. You immediately put yourself into the situation.
My thought on the quarter situation was I would count – up to a round number and then stop. Like I would count as fast as I could because one thing is you can't be the person who counted the least amount of money because then you're just eliminated immediately. So you can't just do like – because otherwise you just do $10 and you'd be like, I remember that. So you got to get – but I would stack the quarters up in some certain thing on the table where they each one indicated a certain amount so that I – even if I forgot, I could just look at them. Mm-hmm. And then I would push them over in round increments, and then I would basically make it my personal goal to get to $20,000 in quarters. And then as soon as I did, I would just stop, and then I would go to sleep. But I can remember 20,000, and 20,000 is enough that you're not going to have done the least.
Mm-hmm.
You won't get eliminated. And also, Like, I think I could count $20,000 in quarters pretty fast. I think I could probably do that in like 4 or 5 hours. And then you'd have more sleep than everybody else, and you'd have a round number in your head that you could remember. That was the strategy I came up with at 3:44 a.m. on Sunday morning.
But then how do you get the quarters to the top of the slippery stairs, though?
That's the hard part. And that's the real synergy is going to be when these two games combine.
All right. I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I got to say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week, I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man, it's not from a female.
Hey, can I kick things off here real quick with... I was trying to log into my Luke at TBTL.net account, and I almost logged into my old Bonneville email account, which...
Ooh, I wonder what's happening
honest,
over there.
Also, I didn't even know that was a thing I had. Like, you think I was rocking my Bonneville account?
Yeah, I was your producer. I know for a fact that you were not. Did you find what you're looking for? Because I can send it to you.
I am about to.
Okay, cool.
I got it here. I found it. It's an email from our friend, listener Jamie in Mississippi. So remember that two TBTL-a-thons ago, we made our way to listener Jamie's house in Mississippi. Her home, also known as Sunstroke House, where she has musical events. Lots of really cool artists have come through and played at Jamie's house. She has like a sound system and chairs. It was one of the nicer places that we've done the show in a long time, which was amazing because it was also her home. And, you know, we've been obsessed with singer Faye Webster. I've been playing Faye Webster stuff constantly here at home. I know you've been playing it a bunch. And would you know, could you believe, I'm amazed, Faye Webster's going to be playing at listener Jamie's house August 4th, 7 or 8 p.m. Has not been quite ironed out. But if you go to Sunstroke House, if you're in the Southeast and you want to go over to Jamie's house and watch Faye Webster play, which is, like, this is crazy. Like, I would... Honestly, I didn't know we could get Faye Webster to come on Livewire. And, like, Jamie has gotten Faye Webster to come to her house and play. Go to sunstrokehouse.com to get your tickets and find out about it.
I honestly, I know that I don't leave the house often except to go to baseball games by myself. But, like, honestly, if the circumstances were different, like, when I read this, part of my brain was like, could I do something crazy? Could I go? Like, this,
dude,
I would.
I?
Yeah. Go ahead.
I had the same exact thought.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No problem.
I'm with you.
Could I go, like, just on a, like, because sometimes I do things when I don't think about them much. You know what I mean? Like, oh, plan a trip and then it never happens. But part of me is kind of like, really, just to kick it with Faye Webster? And, like, I know what her music is like and it's perfect for that surrounding, for that room that she'll be playing in that we now know at Jamie's house. And part of me was kind of like, God, how much would a ticket be for me to go out there and back and make it a mini trip? But that, of course, we're talking about this coming Sunday. It's not going to happen for me and it's probably not going to happen for you, Luke. You're enjoying one of your rare downtimes of not traveling. But if you are anywhere in the area and you like Faye Webster at all, dude, you'll talk about this forever. More than a Ryan Court foul ball, this could potentially be a more memorable experience, I would say.
Columbus, Mississippi is where Sunstroke House is. I'm at the website now, Andrew, and guess what? There's a big picture of us, which is nice.
Ooh, that is so...
We apparently made the we made the cut of being some of the more notable people to perform at Sunstroke House.
Oh, Jamie, that's not your best marketing that's not your best marketing. Oh, there we are. Yeah. Wow, I look grumpy as hell.
I'm with you, dude. When I saw that was happening, I was like, I really had this thought in my mind, like, could I fly to Columbus, Mississippi on Saturday and just roll up and just be like, because that's what a fan I am of Jamie's and what a fan I am of Faye Webster.
So, you were going to fly, though, huh? I was thinking about hitchhiking. I guess that's kind of the difference between us.
Yeah. I think I got enough hitchhiking in on that trip. That was plenty for me. I will probably never hitchhike again. If everything goes right, I'll probably never hitchhike again in my life.
Yeah, me too. I don't ever want to hitchhike again. But that trip really put things in perspective for me. I think that Australia would have been way more nerve-wracking for me if the previous trip hadn't been a hitchhiking trip. I mean, the unknowns going into a hitchhiking trip were just they were so unquantifiable for me. I think it'll make every other adventure I ever go on a little bit easier. Can I read you a song that somebody sent?
Yes.
Can I read you a song, which is a weird way of putting that. But you had mentioned this 3,000th show, which, by the way, I should have said this when you mentioned it earlier. I did get an email from a couple of people who are very excited about the show in Orlando, but they were really concerned that it was going to be a daytime show and they wouldn't be able to get off work, and they would have felt like they were missing, like they've been dying to see a live TBTL forever. I don't think there's very much possibility that we would be doing a daytime show.
No.
We will be doing it in the evening. So again, we don't have dates, or we have the dates, we don't have the locations yet, but yeah, these would be evening gigs if that's a concern of yours. When I was talking about what we should call this tour in the newsletter, I said we could call it the 3,000 tour, sung to the Gilligan's Island theme, of course. So Dave sent this in. Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a great pod cart that started from a studio on 710 Cairo. That didn't pay off, Dave.
Okay.
Right. The mate is a mighty hot dog man, the skipper vegetarian and sober. The boys will set sail one day for a 3,000 tour, a 3,000 tour. That's pretty good. Is that how you, is that your leading characteristic now? Would you say vegetarian and sober? Like that? Those are kind of your defining characteristics?
I would hope so. I mean, that's the I feel like that's a niche that's not being filled enough in the podcasting space.
Mm-hmm.
And so I hope to bring that to the format.
And I'll take Mighty Hot Dog Man. I think that's pretty accurate for me. Can I play for you one voicemail here that I got a kick out of? We were talking about squirrels a while back. I've had this voicemail for a while, just haven't had a chance to play it. We're talking about squirrels a while back, and this was a good voicemail. I'm looking to see if I have the listener's name. Yeah, I think this is from Katie. Just take a listen to this. I think she'll explain it all.
Hi, Andrew and Luke. This is Katie Gerhart. I'm a relatively new 10. I'm a fairly oldish person, which might make me a 10 and a half or a 9 and a half. I'm not sure. I have two very quick stories. One about squirrels. You were just talking about squirrels at Kent State who were kind of aggressive. Many years ago at Berkeley, a squirrel sighted me from afar, mad dashed at me about 60 miles an hour, and actually threw himself onto my leg and climbed up my body all the way up to my neck, paused, and then did the whole thing in reverse and ran away. Memorable.
Oh, my God. Memorable is the understatement of the year.
God. That reminds me a little bit like when the flies would descend on us in Australia and they were all over us, and then the flies would go away, but my skin would still crawl. Like, I would feel the flies. That's sort of how
I
feel right now.
Let me just throw one quick thing at you on that topic. So remember I was mentioning some show that people were telling me to watch, and I watched it and I wasn't really loving it, but then I happened upon that 90 Day Fiancé show, and I was kind of like, this is even maybe too trashy for me. And then I mentioned in passing, oh, people are saying this Instant Hotel is a show that I should watch, and then somebody clarified, well, yeah, we're telling you to watch it because it's Australian. It's basically about Airbnbs. And the first one is in Coober Pedy.
That's right. I saw that, too. Once people connected the dots, they're like, we emailed you guys about this a long time ago because it's about, renovating one of them.
So I watched it.
Coober Pedy. Oh, yeah. How was it?
Terrible. But what's amazing is everybody – they decide to shoot –
all of the interviews. So it's like there's, I don't know, four couples, and they each have a basically Airbnb property in some part of Australia. And then the show is they show up at each other's Airbnb property and they rate them. And then there's these two professional design people who rate them and whatever. For me personally, I'm not riveted by the show, but I was riveted by the flies landing on everyone trying to do these interviews where they're trying to talk about, like, if they liked this cave dwelling in Cooper Pedy or not. And it is, Andrew, I felt like I wanted you to watch it. I want you to watch it just because you will be able to relate so hard to that feeling of trying to not swat flies away when you're taking a picture or whatever, and how impossible it is. And the whole – I only watched the first episode. The entire first episode – when we were in Cooper Pedy, the flies weren't bad there, oddly enough. But I think it has to do with the time of year. They must have been in Cooper Pedy when it was a little warmer, so the flies hadn't sort of died for the season yet. And watching these people being interviewed about things while they're getting beset by flies and while they're trying to wave them away from their face, and then play golf, because Cooper Pedy has this golf course that's like dirt. You know, it doesn't have any grass. That's kind of – it's sort of their claim to fame. The only, like, grass-free golf course in the world. So they're out trying to play golf, and nobody can do anything except try to swat the flies away from their face. Because when those flies are on you, it's all you can think about. You cannot – it is impossible. Maybe if you, like, live out there for 50 years, you just somehow retrain your nerve endings to not care. But everybody else, you just – you there's something very instinctive where you have to just, like – you have to wave those flies away from your face. And everyone's doing it the whole time, and it was cracking me up.
That's why I'm surprised that people who live in that environment haven't, like, evolved to have horse tails so they can just be twitching their horse tail all the time to get rid of the flies. Hey, before we get too far off topic, though, I think Katie had another part of this voicemail that has something to do with baseball. I don't remember what it was, but I remember I liked it. So I hope you do, too.
The second quick thing. I grew up in the 1960s north of San Francisco, so the baseball team was the San Francisco Giants. You were talking about wanting to maybe score the game as you're watching it, Andrew, and Luke said that would be a perfect fit. Well, my dad and I would listen to the San Francisco Giants. This was in their heyday with Willie McCovey and Willie Mays and Juan Marichal, Tom Haller, just the greats. And my dad took a Scrabble game, turned the tiles upside down, and made them into bases and people. And we would listen to the radio, and as the players moved, we would move the Scrabble tiles. So it wasn't exactly data collection, but it was somehow radio made visible. Anyway, two quick stories for you, squirrels and baseball, and power out. I love you both.
That is so great, isn't it?
Is the coolest thing I have heard about in a long time. I can totally identify with why, as a kid, that would just be the most fun way to pass an evening of just moving those tiles around. That is incredible.
Yeah, and it almost is teaching your brain. Like, I remember, I mean, I wasn't a kid when I first started listening to radio. I was well into adulthood when I started listening to radio ball games. But, like, when you don't know that much about the sport and you're learning about it, it's a lot to keep in your head, you know? Even looking back now to what I hear during those broadcasts, I almost want to travel back and be like, what did I enjoy? Because I knew, I feel like when I first started listening to baseball games about 10 years ago in my 30s, I knew so little about the game, about pitch counts and, like, what you're looking for. I'm like, what was I even hearing? And I think I just liked – that's kind of the cool thing about it, is I think you can just let it wash over you and take whatever you get out of it, right? And at the time, I was like, well, I like the sound of it. I can remember who's on – you know, who's on the bases. But as a little kid getting into baseball with your parents and, like, being able to, like, do something so you can, like, kind of play along and help visualize it, that is just awesome.
My version of that was that I would reenact entire – I would do this with basketball too. I would reenact the – or I would basically enact the entire game.
Mm-hmm.
So I would listen to the game on my little radio in the alley behind our house when I lived on 76th Street. And there was a brick wall on the other side of the alley, and I had, like, painted a little strike zone on there. And I would just pitch the whole game as I was listening to it. And then I would do the same thing with a Nerf basketball hoop in my basement when I was a kid, where I would try to reenact every shot the Sonics were doing back when it was Bob Blackburn was the announcer. But I love that idea that the listener's describing. Also, I just love the idea of a father and daughter kind of having that time together. That's really, really cool. I am curious if people would consider doing that with this show.
They probably have. Let's be
honest.
What
would they do? So you turn the Scrabble tiles over, and then you just place them next to each other, and then you go to sleep.
Yeah,
what do you do?
Yeah.
What's the action of this show?
Well, if you have the Johnny and Bobo dolls, that really helps.
The
dolls from what, 4 or 5 years ago? One of me, one of you. Now dubbed Johnny and Bobo, I think, thanks to our friend Gus, right? Didn't he name us Johnny and Bobo? And then you can kind of like, you can just kind of say like, oh, how did you get a table? Like, well, I made a reservation. Oh, you. Like, you can just kind of like act it out. And that's not actually from the podcast, but you can just kind of make up your own stories.
Sure.
That was such a bastardization of it. I actually know that Corky Sinclair scene better than that. You can always get a table.
My dinner with Andre action figures.
Yeah, right.
Oh, you. How did you get a reservation? Oh, I just made a call. Oh, you.
Great. Should we just do it? Should we just end on that and then we can get out
let's
of here?
Do it. Please.
It just seems like
sure as shingles.
Yeah,
sure. Give the listeners some small amount of actual entertainment provided by people who are not us.
This will be the best guest. This will be the best 38 seconds of the show, hands down.
This is without a doubt one of my favorite items. My dinner with Andre action figures, and what you can do, which is so cute, is you can reenact the whole scene, you know, where the two guys talk to each other and say, you know, oh, I'm sure glad you found a good restaurant. It's so hard these days to get in. You know, who do you know? Oh, I just called, made a call, spur of the moment. Oh, you can always get a reservation. You know, that's not from the movie, but you can make up your own dialogue.
Just
so
genius.
Great.
It's literally genius.
I mean, and then you get into the Das Boot stuff.
Oh,
all
that's
of the,
right.
The big hit.
Why has nobody rebooted? No, somebody is rebooting Das Boot, right, as a TV show. Are the headlines like Das
Wait,
Reboot?
Oh, my God. You're not talking about Catch-22, right? You're talking about Das Boot?
No, I'm pretty sure that one of the cable networks, I think I saw a commercial, not cable, I'm sorry, one of the on-demand services like Hulu or Amazon, I'm pretty sure that I saw they're turning Das Boot into a like a limited series or something. And I remember seeing that and being like, well, there must be a million Das Reboot headlines out there, right?
This one, though, they have to stay awake for 24 hours counting quarters in the submarine. That's their only way out of Das Boot.
There is Das Reboot, but it's the name of a book about soccer. What a waste. All right.
We're calling this Sure as Shingles, right? Is that
oh, okay, sure, is that yeah. I couldn't remember what
the,
it
was. I was going to go with the crack of the bat, the taste of the mitt, but I think Sure as Shingles has some real legs.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Although
I'll leave it to you.
I think what I said was the taste of the mitt, the smell of the ball, which I still
okay. Also good. I'll defer to you on that.
Okay.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We are going to be right back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you. So do not miss the get your action figures ready.
Yes.
Please take pictures of reenacting or enacting what we're doing here so we can be entertained by that. Because that's really what this is about. You, the tens of listeners, entertaining us.
Yeah.
All right. See you tomorrow. Until then, please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Power out.